listening to South Florida's good news station, WCNO, Palm City.
This is God's plan for redemption, and it's good news.
Ahoy, crew members, children, moms, dads, grandparents, and great-grandparents. Yes, everyone, welcome aboard the Kids Canoe. We will be paddling through the waters of the Word of God, looking to various parts of creation that Jesus holds in his hands. So put on your life vest of love and hold fast to your paddle of faith for a great adventure into God's creation. All right, well, ahoy crew members, and welcome to the Kids Canoe again. Well, you know, we were talking about America, and I was talking about 93% of the time that Americans existed, we've been at war. And I couldn't help but remember back to that verse in Job 12:23. He makes nations great and destroys them. He enlarges nations, and then he disperses them. And we want to be very careful in America because, you know, we are really blessed. Because what happened was, in 1776, we decided to separate from Great Britain. And one of the things is we had 13 original colonies, and then we went to war. And the war lasted from 76 all the way to 1783. And there, the Treaty of Paris was signed. But you know what happened? Not only did the 13 colonies get their independence, but we actually almost tripled the size of America. Because from the Treaty of Great Britain, we actually got Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia and Kentucky and Ohio and Indiana and Michigan and Illinois. Yeah, we tripled our size because of the Treaty of Paris. But guess what? We gained that because of war. Yeah, we were at war. And then one of the things really happened that was interesting is Florida. And that's where we live. In 1819, we got Florida from Spain. And one of the things that we see later, we went to war with Spain. We got some islands also during that war. And then we see that what happened in 1803. We again doubled our size through the Louisiana Purchase. Now, we didn't have to go to war to get that. We bought it. However, the reason why Napoleon sold us the Louisiana Purchase, all their land in America, because he needed money to fight the Napoleonic Wars. And so we see that again, because of war, our country doubled. And then what happened? Texas actually got into a war with Mexico, and they annexed a large part of Mexico. And then it was the Mexican War. And what happened there in 1848, we gained California and Nevada and Arizona and Utah. So we were seeing that war was responsible for making us a great nation. And then in 1846, we got the Oregon Country. That included Oregon and Washington State and Idaho. So we see that we became a nation from the original colonies on the East Coast all the way to the West Coast, and primarily it was due to war. Not only that, Alaska, we ended up buying that. But you know why we did? Because Russia was in the Crimea War, and they needed money, and so they sold us Alaska for $7 million. And then you know how we got Hawaii? Well, our Marines just came in and took it. Yeah, so we didn't have to fight to get it, but they took it, so we can see. But, you know, one of the things we see that God was blessing America, and we know this because during the time when we were fighting Great Britain for our freedom from them, one of the things that happened was many miracles occurred. In fact, there was a great book written on the miracles in American history, which I read long ago. But one of the things we see is over and over again, the British Army was about to whip us. And for example, one of the things that happened was we crossed the river to escape them, and then the British went to cross the river, but a flood occurred, rainstorms, and it couldn't cross. And then it happened, they kept trying to get us, but every time we crossed the river, the water would flood right after we left. That was a miracle. God was working to basically secure our freedom. It was amazing. He was blessing us. And also, if you remember George Washington, he was surrounded in New York by 44,000 British soldiers. He only had 8,000. And he didn't know how he was going to escape. But a great fog moved in. He was able to get the entire army out from under them. If they would have been destroyed, that would have been the end. And we would have lost, and we would have remained under Great Britain. And then, you know, later on, even though we had our freedom in 1814, Britain tried to come again and take America back. It was the War of 1812. And you know what happened then? Another miracle. They had come in, and they had captured Washington, and they had set it on fire. And one of the things that happened was, right after they set it on fire, they were actually at the Capitol Hill, and they were camped there. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a tornado struck. Great rainstorm. All the fires that were created to burn Washington down were put out by the rain. And then a tornado picked up a lot of the British soldiers and threw them into the air, including their cannons. So we can see it was called the storm that saved America. And, you know, we can see in Scripture and many times the Lord calls us to war. And I couldn't help but think of a movie that I saw once called Saving Private Ryan. And in it, there was this private called Private Jackson, and he was a sniper. And one of the things he would do before he shot, he would quote Scripture from the Psalms. He would say this, "Be not that far from me, for trouble is near. Haste thee to help me. Blessed be the Lord my strength, which teacheth my hands to war and my fingers to fight. My goodness and my fortress, my high tower and my deliverer, my shield, in whom I trust, who subdueth the people under me. O my God, I trust in thee. Let me not be ashamed. Let not my enemies triumph over me." So we can see God expects us at times to go to war. And so, you know, we see this in Ecclesiastes, in Ecclesiastes 3, 1 to 8. "For everything there's a season, a time to every purpose under the heaven, a time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to pluck up that which is planted, and a time to kill." We can see that. And then we also see in Matthew 24, 6 to 8, "And ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that ye be not troubled. For all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places. And these are just the beginning of the sorrows." So, we also read this. "The horse is prepared for the day of battle, but deliverance is of the Lord." That's Proverbs 21, 31. So we see that these are important things. And one of the things I remember is, you know, the greatest loss of life in this country during war was the Civil War. That was 625,000 people died. That was because we were fighting against our own people, the North against the South. And one of the things that happened in that is most people that were fighting were Christians. You know, one of the things we see is the leader of the Confederate army was Robert E. Lee. And, you know, Robert E. Lee was a very devout Christian. And you know what? The only reason he went into the war on the side of the South was because he read a scripture verse. It was Romans 13, 1. "Let everyone be subject to governing authorities, for there is no authority except that which God has established." So one of the things he said, he was responding to exactly the authority of Virginia. They decided to secede. So he was actually following exactly what God said. That was the authority, and he was believing in it. And, you know, a lot of people think the Civil War was about slaves. Now, that was one of the causes. But you know what Robert E. Lee said? Robert E. Lee said if he owned the slaves, he would free them all. And one of the things we see is there's statues of Robert E. Lee all over the country. And, you know, they've been desecrated. They've been torn down. It's kind of sad because he was a Christian man. And, you know, one of the things that we know is one of his people that were opposing him was a man named General Sherman. And, you know, Sherman, he said something really interesting. He said, "I'm sick and tired of war. Its glory is all moonshine. There's no real glory in war. It's only those who have neither fired a shot nor heard the shrieks and groans of the wounded who cry aloud for blood, for vengeance, for desolation." And he made this famous statement, "War is hell." And we see that. "War is cruelty," he also said. "There's no use trying to reform it. The crueler it is, the sooner it will be over." He also had a comment about the reporters. He said, "If I had my choice, I would kill every reporter in the world, for I am sure we would be getting reports from hell before breakfast." In other words, he was looking at the fact that they were misrepresenting what was really going on. But one of the things he shared everybody that there's no glory in war. And there was another movie, The Paths of Glory. And we see that really there is no real glory. And in fact, even Patton said, "All glory is fleeting, so any little glory that you do get fleets, it leaves." So one of the things about General Sherman, we see that his statues are still standing. There's one at the entrance to New York's Central Park, and there's another one right in D.C. And yet, this man believed in what was called the scorched earth policy. Sherman was modern in his methods of fighting. He knew he needed to make the South pay and feel the loss of men, supplies, and land. So he had his soldiers burn the land, burn buildings, burn crops as he went, the scorched earth policy. During General Sherman's march through Georgia and the South, he was known for burning properties, homes, churches, and also he killed unarmed men, women, and children. And after the Civil War, he was sent to solve the Indian problem. And you know what he did? He killed 5 million buffaloes because he knew the Indians used them for survival. So he took them out of the equation. And then later he was asked to be president. He is honored still today. But, you know, one of the things we see, there's a lot of things that are forged by war. In fact, if you look at World War I, when it started, there was a German Empire and an Austria-Hungarian Empire. And after the war, guess what? Germany was reduced. And part of it was changed into Czechoslovakia. And part of it was changed into Poland. Part of it was changed into Romania. So we see that war causes geography changes. And in World War I, we also see the Ottoman Empire disperse. And what we have today, Iraq and Iran, and we see all the things like Yemen and Arabia and Kuwait, all these were formed after World War I because the Ottoman Empire sided with the Germans. And so they lost a lot of their empire because of that. And one of the things, even in World War II, when we talk about that, Curtis LeMay had something to say. He was the one that was bombing Japan. And he said this, "I suppose if I had lost the war, I would have been tried as a war criminal. Every soldier thinks something of the moral aspects of what he is doing, but all war is immoral. And if you let that bother you, you're not a good soldier." And, you know, we look at one of the things in the Vietnam War. We see that really, we had a total of about 58,000 men killed. But you know how many were killed that were in Vietnam? Almost 6 million. You know, a lot of them. And a lot of them are still dying today because we use something called Agent Orange. So you can see what Sherman was talking about. War is hell. We should try our very best to avoid it. And we know that it's a spiritual contest. And sometimes war is just being used to punish people who are a bit sinful. Now, there's something that's kind of interesting. There was a time when the war is at peace. It was a time during the Roman Empire. It was called Pax Romana. And that was from 31 BC until the first century AD. Guess what? That's when Jesus was walking the earth. There was peace then. So, one of the things that happened that gives me a good understanding of war happened just this last Saturday. I went to a veterans program. It was to honor veterans, and I was there. And one of the things that I noticed when I got there was the fact that there was a empty table sitting right there in the center. And the empty table was really interesting. I looked at it, and it had these things on it. It had a tablecloth. It had a single red rose. It had a vase with a red ribbon around it. It had a dish with a slice of lemon on it. It had salt. It had a Bible. It had a glass that was inverted. And I wondered about it. And this was actually called the empty spot at the table. And it was something that all those that were celebrating Veterans Day. And what this was, it was basically a four-hour event. We got there at 5, and there, up until almost 6:30, there was basically all the services and were being represented. And it was really beautiful. But it was really to honor the veterans, those that had died in war. And that empty table was really something because it was symbolic. You know, I mentioned about the tablecloth. It was white. That symbolized the purity of their motives when answering the call to duty. And the single red rose displayed in the vase reminds us of the light of the life of each of the missing and their loved ones and friends of these Americans who kept the faith awaiting the answers. And then the vase is tied with a red ribbon. That's symbolic of our continued determination to account for our missing. You know, what's really interesting, I didn't know this, but the POW and the missing in action, do you know how many there are in America alone? Almost 9,000. We don't know what happened to them. It could be they were blown completely up and we couldn't find their bodies, or it could be they're still in prison. We don't know. That's why we have the POW MIA flag. Okay, and then there was a slice of lemon on the bread plate. It reminds us of the bitter fate of those captured and missing in the foreign war. The pinch of salt symbolizes the tears endured by those missing and their families who seek answers. Of course, the Bible represents the strength gained through faith to sustain those losses that we have from their loss. And then the glass is inverted. The reason it's inverted, it symbolizes the inability to share the evening's toast. And then the empty chair, because they're missing. Boy, it was quite amazing. And then, you know, I couldn't help but think, when I was looking at that, I couldn't help but remember about the Passover on the Seder. When the Jewish have, they actually have a place, an empty chair for Elijah. They're still waiting for Elijah to come back. Okay, in fact, they have the empty chair, and they have a glass for Elijah, which is filled with wine, and then they leave the door ajar, and that's so that Elijah can come. And each year, the children go to look if they're coming or not. Now, I'm going to go back to this Veterans Day ceremony that I went to. One of the things we all stood for was we all pledged a flag. And I think you remember the pledge to allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God. Yeah, that was one of the big pieces of this. Remember the Bible on the table? And now we're saying one nation under God. Then we sang God Bless America. I mean, you can't get more interested in God than that. God Bless America. And then something really interesting happened. They had color guards, and it was called the Presentation of the Colors. And one of the things that we were celebrating was the Vietnam era. And we had a flag for the Army, a flag for the Navy, a flag for the Marines, a flag for the Army, and a flag for the Coast Guard. And it was really special because what they did was they all stood up, three on each side, and then one of them would go down to the end, and they would call for all those in our audience. And this event, this Veterans Day celebration, and it was a dance afterwards and a dinner. And one of the things it was is they called all those that were in the Army, and they would play when the caissons go rolling along. There were about 25 men in the Cascades. That was the group that that I live in with the Cascades. And one of the things is there were all these men that came up and they stood there. They were all from the Army. And then they would play some Marines. Okay, from the halls of Montezuma. And when they did, it was only two guys that came up for that. It was only two Marines in our group. And then they played Anchors Away. And, of course, the guys from the Navy came up and stood. And then they would play Up We Go Into the Wild Blue Yonder. Yeah, they would play for the Air Force. And a lot of guys were in the Air Force. So we see that was a great celebration. And then something happened. And it was really, in fact, I really teared up with this one. They played taps, And Taps, I remember my dad when he died, we were at the cemetery, and of course, since he was a veteran and he fought in World War II, he fought against the Japanese, and he was in the Ireland hopping campaign. In fact, it was kind of interesting because one of the things my father told me about, one of the incidents that occurred, he was on Saipan, and he was in a foxhole with his buddy, Rizzo, and all night long, he was being shot at by a Japanese sniper. And, you know, Rizzo got really angry with my father because guess what? My father slept through it all. It's because my father had a faith. He knew that God was going to take care of him. And, of course, if he didn't, he'd be with him. So it's a big difference when you're fighting and you know you're fighting for God and country. So one of the things is they played this Taps, and I remembered about my dad when he died. And one of the things I remember was the words to Taps. And here's the words to it. Day is done, gone the sun, from the lakes, from the hills, from the sky. All is well, safely rest. God is nigh. Now God is nigh. Nigh means near. And we read in Psalms 145:18, the Lord is nigh unto all them that call upon him. The Lord is near to them. And also the song continues, fading light dims the sight, and a star gems the sky, gleaming bright. And afar, drawing near, night falls. Thanks for the praise for all our days. Neareth the sun and neareth the stars, neareth the sky. As we go, this we know, God is nigh. And we see this in James 4:8. Draw nigh to God, and he will draw nigh unto you. So, all, we're really seeing this representation of our country, our veterans, was all about God. You know, saying the pledge to the flag, one nation under God, singing the hymn, God Bless America, seeing a Bible on the table for the missing man, and also playing the Taps, which is saying that God is nigh, God is near. Okay, and that was something kind of interesting, because one of the things I remembered was one of the men that I met. And one of the things that happened when I got involved with Good Samaritan Ministry, they had all these different men going out and working. And I decided before I got involved, I wanted to see what they were doing. So I remember going out with the men who were mowing lawns. And what they would do, there was this group of four homes that they were going to mow the lawns for. Before they did, they all got together, held hands, and prayed. And I remember a man coming out, and he stood with us and held hands with us and prayed. And so as the men went to work, I asked him, I said, oh, it was really nice you came and prayed. He said, well, I'm an ex-Marine. And he said, and for the Marines, it's God, family, country, and core. And one of the things he mentioned was God first. And see, one of the things that's really beautiful about all that is in our military, especially in the Marines, God comes first. It's really amazing. And one of the things I see when I heard him, he mentioned about the fact that, you know what he did in the Marines? He was the personal guard for the president. When the president got aboard Marine One, he was there to guard him. So it was really interesting to see that for God, for a family, for country, and for core. Okay? And, you know, one of the things is, you know, we have to be very careful how we even treat our enemies. Do you remember the story of Elisha? Elisha was surrounded by the Syrian army, and his servant said, uh-oh, we're in big trouble. And Elisha prayed and said, Lord, let him see what's really going on. Well, he saw the Syrian army, but then he saw God's army with flaming chariots all around. And so what happened was Elisha prayed, and the entire Syrian army was blinded, and they were led to the center of Samaria. And when they got there, they were unarmed and they were blind. Well, then Elisha, he basically said, okay, let them see again. And they looked, and there they were surrounded by the Israeli army. And they said, should we kill the Syrian army? And he said, no, feed them, give them water, and let them go. So we have to be very careful, because, you know, you're going to be judged by how you treat people. And one of the things that I remember really well was my uncle, Gene. He was in the Air Force, and very early in the war in 1943, he was shot down over Romania. They were sent there to bomb the oil fields to keep Germany from getting oil to operate their war machinery. Well, he was shot down, and he was captured. And when he was captured, he was taken to a stalag. And, you know, one of the things he recounted was they treated him fairly well. They gave him enough food and so forth. He ended up surviving 2.5 years in a stalag. So we have to treat our enemies with love and respect. And that's one of the things we need to always remember. You know, one of the things also, you know, we have to be aware that we're at war and Satan is trying to destroy our family. Satan is not fighting the churches. He's joining them. He does more harm by sowing tares than by pulling up the wheat. He accomplishes more by imitation than by outright opposition. And we see this, okay, in James 4:7. Submit yourselves to God, resist the devil, and he will flee. Yeah, he will flee if you resist him. So I think it's really important for us to understand these things, that we have to be aware that it's a spiritual warfare. Our families need dads, and then we need men of prayer. One of the things that I got involved with was a group of men, and we were basically sharing the fact that we were the leaders of our family. We had to take responsibility for them. It's very important. And then during the same ceremony, the veteran ceremony I'm talking about, we had the table, the empty table with a Bible on it, and then we all pledged to the flag, One Nation Under God, and then we all sang God Bless America, and then each of us, they played taps, remember, God is nigh, God is near, in the song, the taps. And then I remember the guy who was leading the group, the veteran that I went to just last week, was Lieutenant Colonel. And he was actually quoted of a poem. It was called In Flanders Fields. In Flanders Fields, the poppies grow between the crosses, row by row. One of the things we see is war is not good. In fact, this poem was written after a battle called Passchendaele. Do you know in the Battle of Passchendaele, over 500,000 men died? But on both sides, almost 250,000 each. And so we see he was reciting that. But one of the things is he also recited the poem, and the poem was all about God again. So we see, and you know, one of the things that I learned, and I have to thank Tim for this, Tim and Donna, with the letter they sent me, because I read the materials they gave me, and in that was a story about another warrior. His name was Jonathan. Jonathan, remember, was fighting the Philistines, and remember his father was Saul, and Saul was sitting there under a pomegranate tree, just taking it easy. He had his ephod, a man bearing it with him, a priest. And one of the things Jonathan was sitting there saying, "We got to go and fight these guys." So he gets up with just him and his armor bearer, and he goes and he starts to fight the Philistine, the entire army. And guess what happens? They start running away from him. And you know, one of the things he says is this in 1 Samuel. He says this, "And Jonathan said to the young man, his armor bearer, 'Come and let us go over to the garrison of the uncircumcised Philistine. It may be that the Lord will work for us, for there was no restraint to the Lord to save men by many or few.'" You know what? Jonathan was a friend of David, remember? A very close friend. And what did David do? He slew Goliath. And I think he was operating on that same strategy. And so one of the things we have to be very careful about, and one of the things people forget, all these people that we talked about that were monkeys, you know, there's a saying that I remember when I was growing up. And we should whistle past the graveyard. And one of the things is, I remember when we went past the graveyard, my mom would tell me to whistle, and that was to ward off evil. But, you know, one of the things you have to remember is it's appointed to men once to die, and then the judgment. Tempus fugit, momentum mori. Time flies, remember death. If children or listeners have any question about today's message, you can contact me, Glenn Swiston, and my email address, luvh2062@comcast.net. That's my email address at luvh2062@comcast.net. Now, if you don't have access to a computer, you can call me at 443-928-8548. That's 443-928-8548. Now, you may be wondering, All the information that you've received from this message, I have backed up with slides. And if you really would like to have the slides also, you can contact me at my email address, luvh2062@comcast.net, and I will send you all the slides that I used in today's presentation. He's got it.